do begin.
Hey, what is up, everybody, and welcome back to another episode. I want to start off today just by hoping that everything around you guys, your loved ones, your everybody in your proximity, I hope they're all doing well. I hope they continue to do well, and you will continue to do well. And, you know, if you happen to be feeling down, like you're kind of stuck in a rut right now, just be sure that, you know, be reassured that you're going to see the light at the end of that, you know? So, and just make sure it's not the light at the end of the tunnel. Yeah, that was a little too dark, but let's move forward. Anyways, I just want to give you guys a heads up also. There's plenty of episodes incoming, so be prepared to be a little overwhelmed with them. But I think, honestly, it's good to be able to have some options because then you can nitpick what you like and what you don't. And, you know, you'll find something you'll enjoy. I know for a fact you will enjoy today's conversation. My guest is Richard Plime. He is an LA-based producer. And I don't want to spoil it, so I definitely hope you guys listen to the episode, finish it through. It's really fun. All I can say is that it felt like a story, like I was a character going through, you know, Richard's shoes and, you know, trying to see where this was going to ultimately take me. I hope you guys enjoy it. That's all I'm going to say. And what's next? Oh, yeah. Music Spotlight. Today, we have Mind Monogram with their song, Cold Chair. This is their latest single. Check it out. It's honestly a dope song. If you have the chance to check out the lyrics, I hope you do. It goes deeper than, you know, what you're hearing. And I think it's cool what they're really doing with this, with their music overall. And particularly with this song, it has overall a really strong message. And yeah, check it out, Spotify, YouTube, follow them, my Monogram, they're fucking cool. Without much further ado, enjoy. What's up, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the podcast. Today, my guest is Richard Plime. Dude, thank you for coming. Thank you for being here.
Oh, yeah, my pleasure, man.
I mean, for people who don't know what you do or who you are, can you give us a little summary of
sure.
what you are?
Yeah, what am I? I don't know. I've done a lot over the years. So I am a producer living in Los Angeles. I actually just started a production company with a buddy that we've worked together for so long, for, I don't know, about as long as I've been in LA, as long as he's been in LA. Mm-hmm. I think I was here a little before him. And so we finally decided after all of these kind of projects and freelancing and stuff, like, hey, let's buckle down and kind of get serious about this.
And like do your own thing.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, when I'm not working on that, I am teaching. Mm-hmm. My background is in theater. So I graduated from Cal Poly Pomona. Mm-hmm. And then from there, went to graduate school at CalArts, like up in Valencia, like a little bit north of LA. And so that's... It's kind of that.
Damn. I mean, I'm interested in finding out how you made the jump to your own production company. Mm. I mean, how long have you been working in that area before you made that decision?
Okay, so do you want to hear, like, the Lord of the Rings trilogy, or do you want to start with The Hobbit and then go through?
Let's do The Hobbit. Let's do The Hobbit version.
The Hobbit? Oh, my gosh. Oh, my God. So, The Hobbit.
Yeah.
I entered college as a civil engineering major.
Okay.
And a theater minor. So, at the time, I did two plays in my senior year of high school and was like so addicted to doing theater, and I loved it. And I thought, but I thought, okay, I'm going to major in civil engineering and I'll minor in theater just for like fun. But secretly I was thinking, oh, maybe like I can make it, whatever make it means, before I have to do engineering. Like that was my little secret that I didn't tell my parents. And so halfway through the program, I had an internship at a really cool engineering firm in my hometown, Riverside, and it was going really well. I mean, I remember sitting in my cubicle and like kind of, I mean, I don't think many interns really actually know what they're doing, but whatever.
Just trying to figure it out.
Yeah. So anyway, I remember one day being there. It was my second summer, and I thought, okay, like, I think I can do this. And I looked around the office, and I thought, okay. So I was in the cubicle, like in the middle, and I saw these offices like along the wall, and I thought, okay, like down there, like she's kind of old, and like that guy over there is old. So maybe in like 15 years, if I like work really hard and do this or that and the other, maybe like, you know, when I'm 40 or 45, I can be in one of these offices. And I was like daydreaming, right? Like, yeah, I'll be in one of these offices. I'll live in like this cool little neighborhood, like the dog and the fence and all of that. And I thought, yeah, I'll be able to travel like for vacations, and I could go to New York and see theater anytime. And I thought, well, I had this like very clear vision of sitting in an audience, like in a like on a Broadway show, and like the actors come and do their curtain call and they take their bow, and I just look over to the side, like not even the main actors or the star, but just like a background person or somebody, and just I could just like see them. And I thought, what if I did that? And then like boom, flashback, I'm back in the cubicle, and I thought, okay, I have to do that. So that kind of started my official transition to just go like straight into theater. So I finished my undergraduate school with theater, did not do engineering, and then went straight into graduate school because I wanted to get like have serious training. And then when you have an MFA or a master's degree, you are eligible to teach at the university level.
Oh, okay.
And so that was a big thing, like the quote backup. Like, okay, at least I can have that backup, which I don't believe in backups, but at the time I didn't know any better. So that was that. After graduating, I came out here to LA. I had literally $0. Like,
so you moved from Riverside, you said Riverside County, the area?
Yeah, like the city of Riverside. Yeah.
Okay.
Then I was kind of in the Pomona area for college. Then I moved up to Valencia.
For the CalArts?
Yeah, for CalArts. And then so as I graduated CalArts, it was like graduation was in like 3 weeks, and I was like completely out of money, like zero, absolutely. And I thought, oh my God, I need a job like yesterday. So I got a job as a barista in downtown Los Angeles in the arts district. And I thought, okay, cool. And so it was literally like I drove this big, huge, like old Dodge Ram pickup truck. So gas guzzler. And I thought, like at the time it was like, okay, there's all these celebrations and all this cool stuff and all of this, like all these final performances, like at school. And I literally had to pick and choose like which things I could go to because like I was not making enough to like drive back and forth. It's like 30 miles from downtown LA to
and the traffic, you're just lingering.
I was only thinking about the gas, honestly. It was just like I can't afford to go back up there. So like I missed a lot of the celebration, and just got like right to work. So now all of a sudden, like boom, real world. Yeah, I don't know. I feel I'm rambling, but
no, you're good. You're good.
So that just kind of started this whole. Yeah, you did ask for The Hobbit, so sorry, folks.
I mean, this is what it's about. You know, we have to know the nitty gritty parts. You know.
Yes. So yeah, in LA, it was harsh. Like right after school, I mean, I literally in the first year, I raked up like over $1,000 in parking tickets.
Dang. Just I thought you were going to say like in tips or something.
Oh, no. Parking tickets.
Parking tickets.
Yeah. So it was like, man, like I just kept getting slammed while I'm trying to survive. And then, so I wasn't even thinking about like the actor things, like getting an agent and headshots. I was like, dude, I need to just like eat. So eventually, I don't know how magically, I just kind of kept grinding and was getting promoted. And then I kind of wound up managing at that same coffee shop. And then, so that just kind of led to me managing at other places. And I learned a lot of skills that are honestly like perfect for producing.
Yeah, I mean, I would imagine. Yeah, you're having, I mean, if you're moving up, you're learning to take care of these new responsibilities that ultimately, you know, you carry on to your next project.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And just kind of knowing that like the buck, I mean, I wasn't the owner, but the owner was looking at me for anything that would go wrong. And so it was just managing people, managing the space, managing the guests. And it was a whirlwind managing there. And then the next place I managed in Hollywood, which was even more high volume.
And that was still like barista related, or that was already going into like,
well, at this point I wasn't really a barista anymore. Yeah. I could. I would train baristas.
Mm-hmm.
And might kind of manage and work with, like, develop the coffee program of the place. And so I would work with the coffee vendors, with, like, okay, what blend should we use for our shop? And, just kind of knowing a little bit about, like, the season, like, the coffee season and, like, the market in different regions, and then kind of selecting that so that we can make more profit as a business. And then I would train the baristas to have latte art and stuff.
Okay, cool.
So throughout all this, I was miserable. Like, just miserable, like, inside, man. Like, working 50-hour weeks, 9-10-hour shifts, just exhausted.
Damn,
problem-solving, like, putting out fires. That's all I think the restaurant industry is. It's just, like, solving problems. Yeah. Like, there's always problems, which isn't a bad thing. It's just, that's the ballgame. So, yeah, I was miserable just doing that. I had no time to, like, to create at all. And a lot of my friends were, well, I don't know, it's easy to see, like, the grass is greener. So I don't really know what was happening, but it felt like everybody, all of my friends from school, were, like, just at it, like
making moves,
having like auditions. And some of them, many of them were. And I'm sure, you know, everybody has their challenges, of course. So for me, I felt like kicked out, or like in the penalty box in hockey. Like, man, like, why can't I even, like, get a shot at, like, going? I would have, like, my baristas going, oh, I need to, like, leave early today, or I need tomorrow off because I'm shooting this thing. Like,
oh, okay.
And it was like, okay, yeah, go. But inside I'm like, oh, dude, there's nobody to cover my shift. You know, like, I'm stuck. So it all just kind of took a toll. I mean, I think anyone who kind of feels, like, sort of out of alignment in this way, they would tell you that it usually kind of, like, filters into other areas of your life. Like, it's all just kind of, like, not kosh. So I put my notice in. I put a month's notice in at this place, trained the new person, and then I left to be a monk.
Damn, I know. That's what I was interested in hearing.
Yeah.
Okay, so tell me. I want to know more about this.
So, So it really came down to, So I felt like I was in the penalty box. I felt like, okay, why can't I afford to live in this city when I literally have, like, on paper, it's like, oh, I manage this place that, like, does very well every day. There are tons of people in there every day. Why can I not afford to live here?
Yeah.
Why am I not able to work as a creative? There are plenty of people in the city that are working as creatives every day. Like, what happened that I can't do this?
Yeah.
Like, I can do this. So why is the world against me? What's going on here? So I stopped and I said, I want to reset. I just want to, like, leave LA. I was so mad at this whole city. I was like, I don't even want to be here.
Yeah.
I just need to reset, figure out, like, me, what's going on, and then go from there. I honestly didn't know if I would be back. I just knew I am not going to, this is not my life path. Yeah. Like, this is not it. So yeah. So there's actually, I didn't have to go too far to be a Zen monk. There's, the very first Zen monastery in the United States is in California.
Oh.
And so, yeah.
Where in California?
So, this guy, Shunryu Suzuki, he was a Zen monk in Japan, I believe. And so he kind of came to the United States, and I think Tassajara was the first one. So there are three places. It's the San Francisco Zen Center. Okay. So the first one was Tassajara, I'm pretty sure. And that is in Carmel Valley. So it's like Sur, but if you just go inland, like one or two little mountaintops.
Yeah.
So there's that one. And then they have the city center, which is in the heart of San Francisco. And then they have a third center called Green Gulch, which is in Marin County, I think. It's like north of San Francisco. So these places have this really cool program in the summer where you can go be a monk for free. And it's sort of like a work study.
Yeah.
So all you have to do is just kind of say, okay, well, as long as I'm here, I will follow, like, the Zen practices. I'll go to all the meditations and follow all of the rules. And you work.
Like, you help around.
Yeah. So, like, for me, I was in the cabin crew, which was pretty much housekeeping. So I was cleaning bathrooms and cleaning toilets and, you know, changing sheets and towels for people. And that was it. And so I lived there for, like, 3 months.
Damn, 3 months?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, from what my understanding is that their sessions are usually very, you're mostly keeping to yourself, right? Like quiet, you're within your own thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, how was that? I've only heard it, and I can't even imagine how that was. I've been in isolation tank.
Yeah.
That's only 2 hours, you know?
Okay.
And it's complete darkness, so I'm like legit floating in water.
Mm.
But to be sitting somewhere or practicing that, I don't know. I feel like that would be extremely difficult.
Yeah. I mean, well, I don't know that there were any meditations that were 2 hours straight. That was about as long as it would. Actually, there would be like full day ones, but usually it wasn't like more than 2 hours every single day.
Okay.
For the summer.
Yeah.
In the fall, I think it's a little more rigorous. So, yeah, it was great. I actually really loved it because I was there for... That's what I wanted. I wanted to just be left alone. I wanted to meditate.
Mm-hmm.
So I was pretty devoted. I think that I kind of caught people's attention there. It's like, he could, like, I don't know, be a full-time monk, which I kind of thought about for a while, like staying there just and doing that. One thing I'll say is that Zen, we all hear about Zen and we're like, oh, he like, they're so Zen, or like, we kind of associate it with calm or peaceful. But to me, Zen means rules.
Rules?
Rules.
Uh-huh.
So when you're practicing Zen, there's like a sequence and an order to every little thing that you do.
Mm-hmm.
And so like when you walk in a door, you have to walk in and out of a door with a certain foot. You cannot stand up and eat.
Yeah.
If you like sit down to have like a cup of tea and journal for a little bit, you can't do that. You have to sit and have tea, or you sit and journal. Like no multitasking.
Yeah.
And so there are so many little rules like this all day long that I think, you know, I don't know, this isn't stated officially, but my interpretation is that the reason for this is that if I am always just focused on the next sequence, I'm like present in the moment and I'm not like in my head thinking about other stuff.
Right.
And can thereby, I don't know, obtain enlightenment.
Mm-hmm.
So Zen means rules.
So you think that's like the idea to grow discipline or?
I guess there is. It is highly disciplined.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. There's sort of two. There's like compassion and wisdom in like the Buddhist tradition. And so you kind of need the perfect balance of both. Zen, I think, starts from wisdom. They kind of go, okay, wisdom first, and then from there you will be compassionate.
Mm-hmm.
I disagree with that.
Yeah.
There are other schools like the Vipassana school where they are all what they call loving kindness. So they start with compassion, and then from there wisdom comes in.
Oh, okay.
It just seems more friendly.
Yeah. I mean, it's just the fact that you spend 3 months there, to me, it sounds very interesting. Like, I have a few friends who've just gone maybe for like the day, because I think you can just visit some of the, what do they call, monasteries?
Yeah.
They go and they stay there for a few hours, but, you know, 3 months, that seems like you really get a taste of at least what's going on, you know, in terms of that.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, it's really beautiful.
So then from there, like, what led you to, like...
Okay, so yeah, so I didn't stay there. Yeah. It was towards the end of my time, and they have this rule at that monastery where if you stay, I think it is 90 days, so 3 months, you earn a free practice period, which is like the fall semester.
Ah, okay.
Basically.
Yeah.
And so that is the more hardcore, all day meditating, like full on like monk. So I was coming up to that. I was like at day 85 or something. And I thought, I think I want to stay.
Yeah.
Everyone like that I met there that was kind of more long-term monks, they were like, yeah, stay. Like, what are you doing? Like, why would you not like stay? Because I think technically my exit day was like a couple of days shy of day 90.
Yeah.
So they're like, you worked all this time. Like, why would you not?
Like, yeah, stay a little. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, even if you defer like your coupon. Like, come on, dude. And so I thought, yeah. And I was kind of hemming and hawing. But I had this, like, inside feeling of, like, it's time to go.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it felt like, you know, when you're a kid at school and it's like you want to snooze.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, your alarm goes off again and again. And you just want to sleep, but you know you're going to be late.
Yeah.
And you just have this ultimate feeling inside of, like, oh, I can't be absent today.
Mm-hmm.
So you get up. It felt like that.
Okay.
That's
a good way to put it. Yeah.
That's how it was.
I was imagining, like, damn, I remember those moments. Yeah. I still have them getting to work sometimes.
Oh, totally. Yeah. So it was kind of coming down to it, and there were fires. It was fire season. and there were fires there, and like the last few days it was like totally smoky in the monastery. We were like in this ravine, like in this valley, so like the smoke kind of stayed, and so like we couldn't see the fire, but we could see that it was near. And so I decided to leave on my scheduled day. Like the day after, the whole monastery was evacuated.
Oh, the day after, everybody, And they didn't get close to the place, I'm assuming? It was just
like... No, it turned out okay.
Oh, okay.
There's actually, there's this book called, I think it's called Fire Monk or something like that. I forget. But there was previous fire seasons where the monastery was actually almost on fire. Oh, and people stayed in with the firefighters to keep it alive. This was not that dramatic. The fires never ended up coming. It was really just a few days. All of the monks went to like one of the other two centers.
Oh, okay, okay.
And that was it.
Yeah.
But I took it as a sign like, yeah, dude, like that was my time to leave. Like, because even if I didn't, the fires were going to say, no, you actually do have to go.
Damn, that is, that's awesome. Yeah, so it's like a some sort of sign that says like, no, Richard.
Yeah, I took it as one. Like, okay, cool. I made the right choice. So then I stayed in Santa Cruz. I have some family up there, and I did theater up there. Met a whole new like cast of awesome people that I love and still like have group chats with and stuff. And then it was time to leave. I mean, that's a whole chapter too, Santa Cruz.
Now, sorry to interrupt you, but in the terms of the theater, how old are you? You say you were like in college when you... No, you said high school when you first kind of got introduced to the idea of it, right?
Yeah. I mean, I loved it as a kid. Like, every time we did a school play, like, I was all about it. But yeah, it was my senior year of high school that I, kind of re-emerged from, like, after doing sports for so long. I kind of refound my way into the theater.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
Now, in terms of, like, the mentality of acting in Broadway or, like, just being, just taking the moment to step out of your own shoes to get yourself in another character. What is that like? Like, what is that process like? You see, like, the dialogue and you're like, damn. Like, so actually, some person came in here once and they were like, hey, like, I don't have anybody to side with me. You mind reading the other part? And I was like, sure.
Wow.
And it was like, I was playing like, it was a female character. So I was like, oh yeah, you know, like just making my voice high pitch. And the guy's like, he got all into it. Like, his facial expressions. I was like, damn, like,
you're gonna sweep you off your feet and stuff. Cool.
He I don't know, he just really embraced it, and it was interesting to see that it was just that moment thing, like for that second he was in those shoes and like that whole thing was embraced.
Yeah.
So I find that really interesting, and I know you've had the chance to do experience in that, right?
Yeah. So becoming the character. To me, it's it is a lot of fun. I don't really spend any time thinking about, like, becoming this character. Like, oh, I need to be, like, I don't know, a coal miner or, like, I don't know, whatever it is. It's kind of much more simple. It's that there is this text, and within the lines, I can kind of unpack like a detective. Like, okay, so what is it that this character wants? Like, what's, like, in this story, like, what are they striving towards? Like, why are we watching this? There's some like old famous quote, I totally forgot who said it, but it's like, movies are like normal life with all the boring parts cut out. So like just the exciting parts. So like, what is it about this person that is worth watching? And so from there, you kind of discover their like their full drive. So for me, working as a barista, it was like, oh, I want to make it as an actor, be in like movies or whatever. And so even though I have all of these engagements with customers and with my boss and with like the parking ticket guy and like all of these things, underneath it all, what I'm working towards is to somehow, some way, make it as an actor.
Yeah.
And so there's like the big goal of that, and then there's all of the little goals leading up to it. Like, okay, I gotta somehow get out of this parking ticket so that I can afford to get headshots. Okay, now I gotta find somebody that'll do headshots for the price of 3 parking tickets.
Yeah.
Now I gotta see how I can get an audition. So there's all of these like goals and needs that we have, and so the dialogue is usually driven towards that. So when I'm focused on fully just getting the thing that I want, that's the more invested I am in that, the less I have to really worry about anything else.
Gotcha.
So I'm not thinking about like, oh, I am a king now, or it's like the 1500s. Like, all that matters is like, I need this woman to be the queen of my country or whatever.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's interesting. There's two kind of main camps in, I guess I'll say, American acting. there's this the sort of like what everyone calls method acting, mm-hmm. which is kind of loosely it means like being fully invested in the role and be saying, no, it is the 1500s and I need to be a king. And I'm going to like live under the freeway for a month just to see what it's like. And
yeah,
like,
to get like the real
all of that stuff.
Yeah.
And so, and then there's the other side that's kind of more about, no, I'm going to analyze the text and stay within the bounds of the script, mm-hmm. kind of more about what I was talking about before.
Yeah.
And trust the text and trust my scene partner. And from there, with that kind of coming from an honest need of obtaining the thing, then the scene will pop. I don't have to go live under a bridge to understand.
Yeah, to understand it.
Yeah, and so in L.A., there tends to be more of the latter, of that method mm-hmm. kind of thing. Even actors that say they're not method, there is this kind of whole culture in Los Angeles of like with Los Angeles actors that is like, oh, they'll do a scene and they'll say, oh, I really felt it. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, I felt like, oh, so it's kind of this kind of the meter is like, oh, I had the emotions, like I experienced this thing, like, oh wow. Mm-hmm. Whereas like in New York, the general thing is wanting to dive into, oh, what's it like to kind of operate this way? Mm-hmm. Like, what's it like to be in this circumstance of like, I don't know, being evicted from my house, or I'm trying to think of plays. Yeah.
Okay.
So it's just this kind of difference of like, oh, I felt it versus mm-hmm. like, oh, what is this like?
Now, I had a, this just came up to me because it's been coming out like maybe the last few years. For example, there's this movie called Ghost in Shell, I think, with Scarlett Johansson. So it's like an anime. And I think there was backlash because she was acting as a character that was not like not Asian or anything. Mm-hmm. I think there was this other movie where an actor, Bryan Cranston, was playing a person that was paraplegic. Mm-hmm. And he wasn't. So people were like, well, why don't you get a real person that can do those roles?
Right.
So what I guess I'm trying to get to is, what do you think about that? Like, in terms of, like, if an actor is there to kind of portray this, like, mm-hmm. to me, I'm like, okay, well, I'm not in the Hollywood area, you know, but mm-hmm. I would think it'll be a lot harder to find actors of that capacity to act that role.
Right.
You know, so I don't see it as a problem, but people just like to like find something and like,
yeah, people. Yeah. We do all love to find something these days. So like, you know, I'll take Shakespeare as an example because it's less heated. Because like, there's plenty of examples. Yeah, like Halle Berry just like had to like apologize for something.
Oh, right. Yeah. Cause she was
to play a trans person. I don't know the details of that, but I know that she ended up not doing it and she issued an apology. So yeah, there is a lot of that kind of happening now. Like, so what is the line between acting and allowing opportunities for people? So in Shakespeare, there's the story of King Lear. Mm-hmm. And so one of the characters is a bastard. His name is Edmund. So he like is an illegitimate son to this guy who's like high on the court. He's not the king, but he's like in there with the mix. Mm-hmm. So this guy has like a son with his wife, and then Edgar, and then Edmund, the bastard. Mm-hmm. And so Edmund kind of is, his first speech is like, oh, nature, thou art my goddess. So like, forget society, forget that I'm a bastard just because like my mom wasn't married to my dad. Mm-hmm. Like all of a sudden I'm like second rate. Mm-hmm. Like in this court. So screw that. I'm going to take control. You know, I was born because out of like passion and love. And like, so that's what I'm about. And I'm going to take over. And so he kind of screws up the system a lot. He's one of the bad guys.
Oh, okay.
And so me now, I mean, I am not a bastard. So mm-hmm. am I like not allowed to play Edmund?
Yeah, right.
It's just because... like I didn't, like that wasn't true to my experience. It's like a classic role. It's a great role. Mm-hmm. Do I need to set aside for somebody to like do that?
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. I think.
Yeah, it's like, I think I like what you said. Like, it's like you need to find like a line where, like my idea is that, again, like if you're going to, it's the idea of acting, you know, mm-hmm. it's, you're not like legit going outside to the, you know, experience life and pretending to be somebody else.
Right.
You're just putting yourself in that role. Mm-hmm. And then I would think if I was to put myself in those roles, it'll give me a new perspective of what those people who have those experiences become, you know? In my sense, I feel myself more as an ally mm-hmm. because I'm able and trying to put myself in the position where I can understand that situation. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that's everybody, right. but you know, I would think that's what some people get out of it mm-hmm. instead of just doing it because you know, I want to play some, you know, somebody who's not able to walk or something, you know?
Right. Yeah. And I mean, there is a lot of beauty in kind of expressing your own truth. Like there's like Theater of the Oppressed and yeah. like Paulo Freire. Like there's this whole movement of theater and they're, oh, what's the name of this company? It's a community-based theater company. They were based in LA for a long time, but they're not here anymore. Their name will randomly pop up mm-hmm. later. I'll say this random yeah. name. And so what they do is they go into communities and kind of talk with the people and say like, oh, what's going on in the community? Like da, da, yeah. da, da. And they get people, they have half of their company members and half of the people that live there.
Yeah.
And they tell stories about what's going on, like what is actually going on in the community.
Yeah.
And so some of the people play like themselves or like a version of themselves and mm-hmm. they kind of get the experience of writing and directing themselves and kind of experiencing and expressing for an audience like yeah. their inner truth, which is really beautiful. Now, this is where it gets kind of harsh, but the film industry, it's an industry, it's a mm-hmm. business.
Yeah.
And that's one thing that actors honestly need to know is that it's really business. The more you think of it as business and not you being creative, the better off you're going to be, particularly in Los Angeles. So you're going to get these breakdowns mm-hmm. and while like from a PR standpoint and a marketing standpoint, it's like, yes, we want to see like more faces and different looking faces mm-hmm. on screen. They also ultimately need to sell tickets and have yeah. views and get subscriptions if it's a streaming service. You know, I'm not speaking for any particular company. I'm not a member of any particular company, but there is the thing of like, okay, who's going to sell the tickets?
Yeah.
What's going to make this movie like sell mm-hmm. honestly, because that's
it's a business
yeah. and so I don't know yeah. I'll just kind of leave it at that.
Yeah, no, I definitely can see in that way. I'm just a bystander. I'm just an outsider that's, you know, looking in as you know, new things come out with like studios or companies. Some of those things are definitely things that they have to be accountable for mm-hmm. but at the same time, at what point are you limiting creativity or, you know, the narratives that are being spoken? And sometimes, yes, those narratives are represented by people that are not associated with those said mm-hmm. narratives. Mm-hmm. But again, at the end of the day, it's about trying to find a way to fully represent yourself.
Right.
And not limit yourself to, you know, somebody telling you that they don't feel comfortable with that right. particular thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I mean, I can kind of take that side to a degree. I mean, I've definitely sat in as an audience member watching films or mm-hmm. shows. And it's a very, like, famous celebrity playing a part.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, like, why do they have that person doing that? Like, yeah. absolutely not. Like, I'd rather see, and I can think of, like, five other people that mm-hmm. are, like, less famous, honestly wouldn't sell as many tickets, but that yeah. I would, that I personally find to be better actors. I'd rather see them, like, do this role. Like, let's, mm-hmm. let's do mix it up a bit. But, yeah, ultimately, it is acting, and that is the whole thing. It's not... Yeah. They're not documentaries.
Yeah, 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 exactly, so, you know? But, I mean, you know, to each their own for now, you know? Again, these are just conversations that I like just having because at the end of the day, if you're not really questioning things and you're just allowing them to exist, mm-hmm. you know, what are you really doing? You know, you're just kind of just, you know, just letting everything around you choose for you in a sense, you know? Mm-hmm. So, again, yeah, so people get the wrong idea. It's not a Richard, people. This is all me.
Oh, I mean, I don't mind. I stand by everything I said. I mean, yeah, I don't know who would care enough to, like, retweet what I say.
Cancel culture.
But go for it. Yeah, then
there's... Yeah, but that's a whole different thing. But going back to the Hobbit story here. Now, you know, you said you started just a production company, like you said, just a few days ago, last week or 2 weeks, right?
Yeah, well, it's official. This week, yeah. It's actually, like, official. Like, all the paperwork's in and stuff so that, like, we exist as a business.
Yeah.
Like, to the greater world.
That's awesome. How was that jump? I mean, have you been producing for a while as well?
Yeah, yeah. So, mostly short films and narratives. I do produce another YouTube channel. Mm-hmm. That is interviews in the hospitality industry. So my partner is a DP, a director of photography. Mm-hmm. He's outstanding with lighting and with his camera work. He's just like truly stupendous. And so he's been working for other companies over the last years. We've worked together on creative projects. So we kind of decided, hey, you know, he actually is my rock climbing partner. We like are avid rock climbers.
Nice. Yeah.
So like we're literally every week like putting our lives in each other's hands. Yeah. Like, okay, I'm your safety net while you're up there, and he's mine when I'm up there, like on the wall. And so we thought, yeah, this just makes perfect sense. We work well together. We're friends. We trust each other.
Yeah.
Why not kind of have a little more agency in what we create?
Damn.
So we're doing it.
Damn, that's awesome. I mean, I would... That just sounds... It sounds hard.
It's scary.
It's... Yeah, right?
It's definitely scary. Yeah. But that's okay. That's also kind of the thrill of it. Like, why would I not want to be... Like, what else do I have to do?
Yeah.
Then something awesome, scary... That will totally be rewarding. Like, even if it, like, quote, fails, like, whatever, dude. Like,
you did it. At least, you did it.
At least I did it. I really don't have anything to lose.
Yeah.
Everything to gain.
Now, are you doing just, like producing movies, like, documentaries type of things?
So, we are focusing on fashion. So, we're doing fashion commercials and just kind of fashion work. So, fashion-based people. So, our target client list would be, like, up-and-coming designers and brands. Clothing brands. Okay. Yeah.
Damn, that's... So, I mean, when you made this jump, I mean, if you don't mind me asking, what were you in the process of doing? Like, were you still... Because I know you teach, right?
Yeah. So, I've been teaching more than anything lately. So, I kind of quit hospitality after I became a monk. Like, that was...
Yeah.
I did it a little bit after that, but I ultimately decided, no.
Yeah.
Like, I'm done with that. I came back to LA and I said, okay, I am going to make this... Like, work. I'm going to work as a creative.
Mm-hmm.
Like, all my income is somehow directly related to my degree. I'm not saying, like, it's only when I book work as, like, a person, a character on a show. But somehow it will be related. And it was scary at first, but it worked. So I got a lot of freelance work, kind of behind the scenes and on camera a bit. And, yeah, I teach at Cal Poly Pomona. I still teach some classes there every semester. Mm-hmm. I teach at another place here in LA that's kind of more kids. And so that's what I was doing before. And I thought, okay, no, I feel like, you know, with COVID-19, it was a great opportunity to take stock. You know, one thing I loved in lockdown was that I didn't have to drive every day. It was so nice, like driving to Pomona, driving across town, like I spend so much of my day driving, and I thought, how could I do less of that? You know, what do I want to keep? Yeah, just what do I want to keep from, like, this routine, and what do I want to kind of let go of? And I thought, no, you know, I want to kind of take agency, take more ownership, kind of going down the route of being a professor doesn't seem that interesting to me right now.
Mm-hmm.
I love teaching very much, and I totally dig my students. And I have an open book with my students. They can contact me even after, like, the class is over, and they all know that. So teaching is fine. Being a teacher just feels like there's so many rules. I don't like rules. it feels like there's just so much in academia. Like, there are so many hoops to jump through. And, like, the ultimate reward isn't that appealing to me.
Yeah.
Like, the kind of the end result of that path doesn't feel that exciting to me. So I thought, okay, like, let's do, okay, what if I just kind of go over here and, like, from a more entrepreneurial standpoint and kind of use my degree that way. So that kind of started the dialogue, the serious dialogue.
To get it started, to get the ball rolling.
Yeah. And then so just kind of the timing worked out. It felt like a fit. Yeah. And since, you know, this is a huge, like, asymptote, like the COVID-19, like, it's like, okay, so let's kind of use this and, like, leverage it into, like, changing up the scene for us.
Yeah, no, it's true. I mean, that's what you really have to, right now. That's the moment to do it. You know, I would think it's an unfortunate moment for sure, but, you know, for those people who are not necessarily, like, you know, been holding off on doing something, you know, right now, at least for me, you know, there was a few projects that I already started kind of kickstarting, you know, for the same thing. That's
nice.
Like, okay, I reassessed everything. Like, okay, where am I standing? Where is everything going on right now?
Right.
And that kind of helped me, you know, make some steps.
Yeah.
But for sure, you know, I think a lot of I've seen a lot of people take advantage of that. Or if not just take advantage, they've evolved their ways of what they're doing.
Yeah.
Molded into perfecting yeah. the situation.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah, that's great. I think that's the exact thing to do is to go, okay, like, here I am. Like, what do I want to experience? Mm-hmm. What do I want my life to be? And let's do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, why not?
Now, do you see yourself, like, with the whole production company right now with the whole COVID situation, like, how do you see yourself, like, I'm assuming there's a lot more regulations in terms, because they haven't even opened up Hollywood, right? Like, they're still kind of, like, frozen in place for the most part?
I think so. Now, I'm totally officially shouldn't even say this, but I do know of, I have, like, I know somebody who works for a place.
Yeah.
and they have been shooting for a little while.
Oh, really?
With a very minimum crew, and they are shooting way outside of Los Angeles, where it's like a low profile. Mm-hmm. So I think people are kind of making it happen as making they can. For us, you know, fortunately, it lets me kind of spend a lot of time on the infrastructure of it. Like, how do I want the systems to be in place, like, once it is rolling?
Yeah.
But as far as, like, restrictions and stuff, it kind of doesn't matter to me.
Yeah.
I mean, not like I ignore them. I do not like rules. I already said that. But it doesn't mean I don't follow them, if usually. And so with this, I would follow them.
Yeah.
But all it means, it's just kind of a given for the project.
Mm-hmm.
There's always givens. Like, okay, we only have this budget. Okay, we're working with these people. We got to do it at this time. So, like, how can we make it the most awesome thing with just what's available?
Yeah.
And so if you throw in, okay, minimum crew, and okay, we got to wear masks, and maybe now the sets all have to be outside where, like, there's more air, not in a closed space, then cool. That's just...
you got to adapt to it.
Yeah, like, limitation inspires creativity.
Yeah.
Like, straight up.
That's just perfect, yeah.
Like, instead, like, what's the alternative? Like, oh, man, I can't because COVID. Just like, no. Like, how can we do this so that everybody's safe? Everyone, like, is here that wants to be here. Nobody's forced to do it.
Right, true.
And if we can't do it, like, if we really absolutely zero can't do it, then we'll figure out how to do it with animation.
You like, find a way.
Yeah like, why not? I mean, and honestly, like, once you kind of put it, like, once you decide what you're doing, it will happen. It really will. It will look differently than you anticipate it.
Sorry, I put this down here.
So and, you know, you don't always know, like, when it's going to happen or how exactly, but don't worry about that. Just kind of stay on the course, keep your mind on it, and one way or another. Yeah, I could talk about that.
Is it hard maneuvering through Hollywood, like, to where you visualize yourself? Because, I mean, you know, you see movies and they make producers and, like, they make, like, these agencies look like douchebags and all this stuff, and you're like, oh, man, there's this weird, like, culture going on. Like, do you like, you, while you made yourself through this a whole path, have you, like, I don't know, tell me about
yeah so, like, I remember, like, I was still in high school and there was this show called The OC. It was, like, really popular. And so I remember, like, in, like, I think it was a People magazine or something, like, one of those, like, my girlfriend at the time had it, and I looked through. Okay, I was just looking at it. I wanted to be in LA, man.
Yeah.
So I saw this, like, little clip with, like, a quote from Adam Brody, who was, like, one of the stars of The OC. And he said, like, Hollywood is like high school. Something like, seriously, Ashton Kutcher is the prom king. Like, something like that, like, light and fun. And I kind of took that, and I just remembered that. And then when I did come here, I thought, yeah, LA is like high school at lunchtime. Because everybody's here hanging out. Yeah. Everyone's talking about what they just did or what they're about to do. And everyone wants to be in, like, the coolest crowd as possible.
Yeah.
But nothing's actually happening right now. Because if it was, you'd be out doing it. You wouldn't be here, like, hanging out. That's my little joke. But, yeah, so there are, I guess there are jerks anywhere. There's also really awesome people.
Yeah.
And you just kind of weed out. Like, I love meeting a jerk because it's like, cool, now I know I don't have to worry about ever wanting to work with you again. Awesome. And then I meet awesome people. Great, I'm so glad I found you. Like, let's keep in contact.
Like, is there, like, things that, like, because I know, you know, when people come and try to print stuff, or from what I've seen, like, there's this vast, like, work or that they put into their portfolio, to their, like, their headshots type of thing.
Yeah.
Are those, like, key nowadays too? Like, from what I understand is that those they have been existing for quite a while. Are they still as relevant as they were, like, 20, 30 years ago?
Headshots in particular? Yeah. So here's the thing with Hollywood. Like, there's all this, like, getting through the door, getting in the door, or through the wall. I think it's getting in the door or whatever. There is no door. Doesn't exist. So everybody, just forget it. Just it doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. Just go after your work. Do what you want to do. Be respectful of the people that you meet. There are strategies for how to kind of narrow down your focus and kind of choose your path. Mm-hmm. But it's your path. Headshots. Yes, they're absolutely needed.
Yeah.
Don't spend $1,000 on headshots yet. Damn, you'll know when you'll know when to spend $1,000 on headshots. You'll know. You don't need to spend that much. You don't need a bunch of looks, like looks. Mm-hmm. You will feel like you need to, because you'll want to go. Oh, you'll want to show your range. Like, mm-hmm. I could be like a cowboy. Oh, I can be like Peter Parker. Oh, I can be a doctor for like those shows. I can be a strong character. I can be a weak, like all of these kinds of things. Mm-hmm. And you'll want to capture them all on your headshot so that you can go to your agent and go, look at all this stuff.
Yeah, I can do all this.
Like, yeah. That is absolutely the wrong.
Oh, really?
Wrong waste of time, waste of money.
Yeah.
Don't. Remember, this is a business. Mm-hmm. And so what you want to do is hone way in on one, two characters tops that you can do in your sleep.
Yeah.
Like, straight up, no big deal. You could, like, get a piece of paper and look at it and just be that. Like, without even thinking about it. Mm-hmm. And only get those headshots. Just those two looks.
Ah, okay.
And you'll want dramatic and commercial, so that you'll get some with you smiling, mm-hmm. looking like that, and some with you looking serious and revered and, like, sexy and all that. But that's it.
Yeah.
And then when you go and you get your agent, you just mark it as that. You just want to be known as that, so that mm-hmm. everyone that you meet, they think of, oh, anytime I need this, oh, call Richard for that. Mm. Oh, call Eddie. We need Eddie for this.
Yeah.
Cool. And then you develop, that's how you actually book work, by being an expert. And this is something that's true of any business model. Yeah. You want to like narrow your focus. Mm-hmm. Like, think about it. Like, it's often compared to like going to the doctor. Like, if you need heart surgery, do you want to go to a general practitioner?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Or do you want to go to a heart surgeon?
Yeah.
So it's the same kind of thing. Like, mm-hmm. position yourself as an expert. Like, I am the best this character ever. And if you think about any of your favorite actors, they all do that.
Yeah, I was thinking about some right now, like Bruce Willis.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just think of him, and I think some sort of Lethal Weapon. No, that's Mel Gibson.
He's Lethal. Or no, he's Die Hard.
Die Hard, there you go.
Yeah, Die Hard, Die Hard. I mean, like Ben Stiller, he's ultimately just like out of the loop. Mm-hmm. And he has two versions. He has the Zoolander version, and he has the Meet the Parents version. Zoolander, like, so strong, like, yeah. strong personality out of the loop, and like kind of meek guy out of the mm-hmm. loop.
That's true.
And so you can pick whoever you want. Even some of you may be thinking about, what about like somebody really like transformable, like Meryl Streep?
Mm.
That is her thing, is that she transforms. It's the one thing. So even though she does all of these things, uh-huh. that's her thing, is that she can become anybody. And that's why she's booked to play all of these like famous people lately, prominent like women figures. Yeah. So
That's. I mean, I you mentioned that. That makes a lot of sense. Like, I was seeing Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, the last Quentin movie with Leonardo, and I think before that I forgot what movie he did before, but he won. I think it was that When He's All Grizzly and Stuff. I forgot what it was called, but.
Oh yeah, Leo DiCaprio.
Yeah.
Yeah, from The Revenant.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, so like kind of the same, but not really. But you can still see how they're both different characters for sure. Mm-hmm. I mean, there was this other movie that I... Django, where he's playing like the southern slave owner or something. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so his character is pretty intense. But I can see how, what you mean in terms of roles and narrowing that focus down.
Yeah, yeah. And to everybody, like, that's not to say that these aren't incredibly talented people. Mm-hmm. Leonardo DiCaprio is a phenomenal actor, like absolutely brilliant.
For sure.
So I'm not saying that just like you don't have to be good. You absolutely have to be skilled, but just narrow it down, and then you'll find your people. Like, notice you just mentioned like two or three movies that Leonardo DiCaprio did that were Quentin Tarantino movies. They worked well together, so they keep working together. Like, so don't be a jerk on set, and they'll call you back to work with them again.
Yeah,
that's how it goes. Yeah.
Damn.
So. Yeah, so again, it's not this big wall. Mm-hmm. Just kind of find your way, like find your group of people, and do work.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, it's been cool. There's been a few times that I've been invited to, like, it's like independent films, like right here at Los Feliz Theater.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's cool, you know, just seeing like the whole cast, the crew, like come together, and then they have like the whole question, like, the Q&A at the end.
Totally.
And it's very, very interesting to see, like, you see them on screen, and then you see them talking in the front. You're like, dude, how did the guy become this guy? Like, there was, like, this movie with some vagabond guy. And you see him, and he's, like, all clean suited, like, all regular. He was kind of nerdy. And I'm like, dude, he was playing this crazy guy, like, on screen.
Yeah.
And it's just really cool, like, just to see the magic that happens mm-hmm. and to create those experiences, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I'd say to find more people, going to film festivals is the mm-hmm. best place for actors
to go. Going to the film festivals?
Oh, yeah, of mm-hmm. course. If you're a director, it's kind of not as great to... I mean, it's awesome to have your work at a festival, mm-hmm. but it's difficult to meet collaborators because it's a very director-heavy event. So you're going to meet other directors and you could talk about stuff, but there's few chances of, like, further engagement of collaborating. Mm-hmm. But if you go to a film festival as an actor...
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. I've seen everybody's film, and now I can go to the people, like, at the party after... Yeah. At like and say, wow, I saw your film today and I totally dug like this, this, and this. Like tell me about the process. And then if you vibe, you can say, yeah, here's my website, like mm-hmm. whatever. I'd really dig to and it is networking, but it's you know, you can do it two ways. You can like be networking mm-hmm. or you can just go and meet new people that you want to make work with.
Like, so that happened kind of naturally in a sense?
Yeah. I mean, it's not going to work unnaturally. It's going to be horrible. You might not even like it when you're there. Because making a film sucks. Yeah. It's awesome, but it takes forever. It's like long days.
Yeah.
And you're sweaty and you're hot and you're hungry and tired. And like you did it 15 times. So it might as well be with people that you think are awesome.
Yeah. Is there like... Do you think there's anything grounding about the experience of, like, creating those experiences? Like, let's say for you, like, the times that you've produced something, like, have you yourself felt like you've grown from those experiences in terms of, like, your skills or your, you know, not ideology. There's another word I'm looking for, but I can't think of it right now. Like, your thought process, I guess.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, every experience is totally rewarding. Kind of the first... short film that I fully produced, I wrote it, mm-hmm. I produced it, I was in it, I didn't direct it, but that was an incredible experience. Mm-hmm. We had zero budget. Damn. But on paper and the production values are one with a very nice five-figure budget. Mm-hmm. So, and it really just came down to the relationships I've had and like people hooking it up. Like people having access to like their work gear or like people having access to like their space that's going to be closed at 5 mm-hmm. and you can totally use it just by using the people that I knew immediately mm-hmm. and just kind of the investments I've had with people with their stuff.
Yeah.
So that was incredibly rewarding. That's its own Hobbit story in itself, just that film. Because like there were days, dude, where it was like, okay, I have $30 in my bank account. It's Wednesday. It's not pay week, and we're shooting Saturday, and somehow I got to be able to get out to, like, wherever to shoot mm-hmm. and feed this crew of people, and it's going to happen somehow.
Yeah.
And I just trust it. I mm-hmm. don't know how. I only have $30. I'm not sweating it.
Yeah.
I decided I'm making this movie. Everybody can be here Saturday, one way or another.
Yeah.
And, like, literally, like, I would get to, like, coach somebody. For like they call Thursday to coach Friday mm-hmm. or some other, like, all kinds of little things like that.
Yeah.
That totally, like, we squeaked through, like, just in time. Like, the whole project was like that. And so that was where I really learned that, yeah, just kind of decide what you want to do mm-hmm. and embrace and enjoy the hurdles, because oftentimes they, I know, it's like being in New York where it's like you run down like to the subway and like you see the train and like the doors close on you and you mm-hmm. just miss the train. And it's like, man, now I have to wait here, like blah, blah, blah. And it sucks. And then in like 10 seconds, the next train comes and it's the express train.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden now you're on the train where you get to skip over like 3 subway stops to like get to downtown quicker.
Yeah.
So stuff like that, like just kind of enjoy the journey of it, because that's what it is about.
Yeah.
Like when you get it to the top of Everest, you can only be there for like 20 minutes or something before you die. Like, seriously, die, like there's something about the oxygen. Like if you do make it, that incredibly crazy journey, Like, you can only be up there for, like, a very, very short very time, short and you time. Have to come down.
Damn, so. That is crazy. Yeah, I've had the chance to skydive before. And, I mean, it's not Everest and stuff, but, you know, the whole time you're waiting on the plane, it's going up, it's rattling, mm-hmm. people are strapping you up, and then they Dude. Open the door in front of you, they're like, you ready? And you're like, oh, you're not ready, you know?
Yeah.
And then they just push you, and then you just... Maybe, I don't know how long you're falling. I didn't count it, but it seemed like maybe a minute, maybe something. Dang. But it's so short, but you just see like this beautiful landscape, you know?
Yeah.
And it, before you know it, you're on the floor and you're back and you're like, damn. That was awesome. It was awesome. Yeah, you know?
Cool, man.
But I have a question before we wrap this up.
Cool.
Will you ever become a monk again, Richard? Or will you ever go back?
I kind of was thinking about going back there just to see it, to be there. I mean, many of the people would have moved on. Some would still be there. I don't think so.
Yeah.
I still have a meditation practice, and that chapter truly influenced the growth of my spiritual journey. Mm-hmm. I don't identify as Buddhist,
though. No.
But that's a whole other story. So short answer, no,
that's good. I mean, not that it's good that you're not becoming one, but right. you know, I was just curious.
For
those people, if you know, if you want to, people want to get in contact with you, like say they're like, I need this guy as my mentor or as a whatever they need you as here, is there a place that you prefer for them to get in contact with you?
Absolutely. So kind of as we spoke about, I am kind of shifting my focus from teaching to producing, but I love teaching and I love working with people and sharing the knowledge that I have kind of received or the experiences I've had. So I started a blog and website that people can check out. I post regularly. It's geared towards actors loosely. I mean, that is kind of the focus audience, although I do keep it broad, and I kind of draw from areas outside of acting for inspiration and motivation. Yeah. So if you want to check out my work there, my website is Richard H. Plime. It's spelled Pluim, P-L-U-I-M. So Richard, RichHPluim.me. That's my website. You can check out my blog. You can send an email there to me if you have questions about things or if you want to kind of work with me. My Instagram handle is the same, at Richard H. Pluim. So I'm on there a lot.
All right, well.
Yeah.
I mean, sounds good. You guys heard it. You know where to find them. Just, keep it clean. Keep it clean.
Yeah, for sure, dude. Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thanks, Richard. Thank you so much for coming out. I appreciate, again, the time that you took out of your day to come sit down here. Hopefully I see you soon.
Yeah,
and then totally, hopefully dude. Next time, I'm honestly trying to get you and Al on the podcast together.
Yeah.
So I'll reach out to him, see where his schedule's like, and then we'll...
Oh, I could drag him in here. That'll be fun.
Yeah, no, I want to do it. Like, I've been thinking about it because I've been meaning to get him back on the podcast again. So I'll have both of you.
Nice. But, yeah,
right on, dude. Thank you again so much, and we'll see you next time.
Yeah, bye.
Thanks, dude.